The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, you're listening to Sup Doc, a podcast about documentaries. Yep, that's it. I'm George Chen. I'm your host for today. And today we're going to be talking about a classic cinema verite film, the first Frederick Wiseman film we've been handling, actually. This is High School from 1968. And here to discuss it with me is my guest for today, Brian Miller.
Hi. Did I pick something that's too basic?
No. It's not too basic at all. But let me just do a quick intro for you. For people that don't know Brian, he runs a great record label called Death Bomb Arc. And what else can we plug about you?
Well, I mean, that's the main thing I do these days.
You put out a book last year, or it's the music in spoken word?
Yeah, the end of 2018 was the first time my label put out a book, which came along with a CD, though, because we're a music label. And so the CD kind of blurred the lines between being an audiobook and a score at the same time, or maybe audiobook with a score. Trying to do new things. I've just moved back to LA recently and,
welcome back.
I mean, I've been doing this label for 21 years, so
yeah.
Whenever people ask, what do you do? I don't know how deep to reach.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I remember when you started doing this label, actually.
I've known you longer than I've been doing the label.
That's true too. Yeah. Yeah.
I met you while I was still in high school.
Yeah. Right. I was, speaking of high school, very good segue. Well, just let's also take a moment to plug the record that I did on your label,
which is
always a good thing, is a Word Origami Deluxe Edition, which is a bunch of remixes. A lot of people that are already also involved in Death Bomb Arc are on that, like Margot from Dis Fantasy and Jonathan from Clipping.
And Will Bill Hudson from who's Clipping. Been a guest on this show.
Yeah, this is actually unofficially, we've had like, you're like the third representation of Death Bomb Arc on this podcast because Ed Balloon did it too.
Oh, that's right.
So, like, yeah, we had to get you. We're basically the label that we're most closely associated with now.
Well, and we watch a lot of movies together now.
Maybe Kill Rock Stars because we had Dana Gould and someone else who's on Kill Rock Stars, Amy Miller. And yeah, I think we've had a few. Solomon Giorgio did his record? I can't remember. I think Solomon might have done it. Anyway, you are Kill Rock Stars. Both. Oh, the Wimps. Yeah, of course, the Wimps. That was the other connection we have. But yeah, like, yeah, you also host a nice quiet little movie night. I guess it's quiet if people aren't yelling at the screen. Like
I try to pick movies that make people yell at the screen.
Though. Yeah. No. Should we talk about... We do a side podcast about Uninvited and the Cat Within a Cat movie.
Wait.
I've shown people...
Wait, you're doing a podcast
on
that?
No. I'm saying we should. I've shown clips of... shown YouTube clips of that to several people.
And yeah, there's amazed. All these movies that I really love, but if I recommend to someone that they go see it and then they go watch it alone... they're going to come back and say, I hate it.
Yeah.
Like, it's guaranteed. Their movies are only good when you have someone else to turn to, look them in the eye, and confirm, this is really happening, right?
Yeah. You know? Which is why the only reason I want to see Cats, it seems like it's going to be one of those. Just like, I'm sure at this point some of you have seen Cats, but all I know is that it looks terrible and they had to redo the CGI a week after the release of the movie. So I'm like, that sounds ideal. Have you ever shown, like, there are documents, I think, that fit into that category, like things that are good as a group viewing watch, like I'd say like a Heavy Metal Parking Lot, a Memorial Day 2000, stuff of that ilk. Have you guys done anything
like that? I haven't
done
that yet, but I wouldn't be against it. I mean, we've done even episodes of TV. mm-hmm. for some. You know, we've done a lot of different things.
You're basically like having like what is essentially a podcast in your house when you're doing that, because people are just running commentary tracks the whole time. Speaking of, so you actually have the, you brought over the DVD of High School, Frederick Wiseman's 1968. Would you say, people say seminal all the time. I think that it's about high school, so sure. It's applicable. There is actually talk about sexual reproduction in this, so I think
there is.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like everyone kind of knows what's the big one by him, Titty Cut Follies,
yeah.
I'm not sure if people know High School. I know it's big enough that he made a sequel, which I've never seen.
I started watching a little bit of that last night because I watched this on Canopy. Shout out to Canopy with a K, which you can get at least to LAPL members, you can get members. Just everyone should have a library card in LA. Yeah. Just get a library card and you can watch High School for free on Canopy, whatever city you live in. Ideally, you can find it on Canopy.
Yeah. If you got the DVD. If you don't watch this whole, listen to this whole podcast, cut to the chase, watch this movie. It's good.
Definitely watch High School. It's only a little over an hour, I think. Yeah.
I first saw it in the late 90s when it was being shown on PBS, and I tuned into it about halfway through, immediately recognized I liked this a lot, and at that time, I kept a VHS to record things at all times. And so for ages, I just would watch the second half of this movie over and over again.
And the second half?
Yeah.
Like, no intro.
I had no idea what happened.
I mean, there's not a lot of setup, to be honest.
It's a cold open, I think.
Yeah.
Right? And I watched that for a long time and had no idea how you would see it. And I couldn't find any place to see it. And then eventually the internet, I could start getting information that it existed, but I still couldn't see
it. You just saw the end credit, just had the names at the end.
Right. Like, yeah. I knew it was called High School. And eventually the internet did acknowledge its existence. And then a handful of years back, you know, I should have found out, is the director alive still or not?
Yeah, okay. I believe so. I mean, his most recent thing was Ex Libris, which is great. That's okay. About the New York public library system.
Okay.
Shout out to libraries again.
And that one I heard did pretty well.
I don't know like if those, I think they do get theatrical screenings, but that is also on Canopy. I watched mm-hmm. it on Canopy. It's really fascinating because there's like so many aspects of, like what, let's back up for, I'm sure a lot of doc fans do know Frederick Wiseman, but this is like the first thing you'd seen of his, right? You didn't really follow up and watch other stuff?
No, I haven't become a Wiseman
head. A Wiseman head? Yeah, he's sort of like considered, I mean, I've only seen like, I guess, 2.5 of these, because I haven't finished the High School 2, which takes place in 1994, which there's like old Macintosh computers. It's all sorts of like fashion from that era. I didn't get far into it enough to see if they talk about Kurt Cobain, but I assume if it's anything like this, there is like a sort of a lot of historical tidbits, but kind of weirdly ahistorical. It's like there's a lot of stuff that's just like universally true about like pedagogy or whatever.
And the write-up for High School 2 makes it seem like he wanted to make something that is the counterpoint to High School, because High School definitely seems like a movie about an institution that is kind of defending conservatism in the face of like civil rights movement.
Yeah.
And High School 2 is described as a film that is about a sort of liberal education that's succeeding and getting a lot of people into college.
Yeah. I I'm not super far into High School too, but like already like the tone of all the teachers is like the radical tone you would expect the difference between a teacher in 1968 in Philly and a teacher in like New York in 94. Like it's weirdly like, it's almost like what happened with, did you watch Watchmen?
The new show? I haven't seen the original
HBO show
yet.
It sort of does this thing of like, they posit the fantasy world of like, instead of Ronald Reagan getting elected, Robert Redford gets elected after Nixon. And then, so then there's like this weird reaction to like 30 years of progressivism, or like a version of progressivism. In a way, it's like High School 2 is like, you can kind of see like the, you know, basically High School from 1968 let's set the scene. It's all, these films do not set anything up. They just straight up are just like, here's a title. I mean, I guess there's like an Otis Redding song in the beginning. They're sitting on the dock of the bay. But then you just are launched into like a setting. The setting is the star. There's almost like not really like character. There's definitely characters in this because there are just like such weird. It's definitely
well, editing
like,
and yeah. occasional, very occasional music use.
More in this than I thought there would be. Like, well, stuff where it's like...
And there's even a diegetic music use, but through those few elements alone is, I feel like, the only way that that Wiseman is putting any commentary on what's going on, which is a great technique because it makes you feel like you're just witnessing this raw footage and that it's clear how to interpret it. But of course he's manipulating it. No movie exists that doesn't have manipulation, but it's such a subtle hand and it's so, you know, it doesn't have like a, it's not Spielberg. It's not heavy, you know, emotional manipulation. So it that's the thing that's impressed me the most about it. There's tons of documentaries I've seen that are probably more interesting subject matter, but the mastery of document, you know, the craft of making a documentary in this, I just unforgettable.
Like the verite style, basically. Yeah. Like, yeah, like you kind of hide your everything. When I'm watching it and knowing a little bit about what he does, which is just like kind of like look at all these angles of like institutions, I was like, okay, I can see like. Kind of like cheeky cuts. There's a lot of very cheeky editing going on in here. Like even cuts between scenes, like someone's like talking about Casey at bat and then they cut to like a T-ball. Like that's a little on the nose for this time, but it's also, it's like 68. This is a lot. It's, and in some ways it's a little bit like those Michael Apted, like 7-Up movies. Have you seen any of those?
Not
like,
all of them. I've seen the first few.
Some of those. Like, it's like you could try to follow up with people, but it's, I guess it's what he did with doing another movie in 94. But the fact that it's 1968 is kind of pretty important. Like, it's the middle of, it's Vietnam War, basically. Mm-hmm. These kids probably, some of them are going to go to Vietnam. Like, it's like they're, you know... This is kind of an okay boomer movie. I was thinking about this.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, like this is actually the boomers when they had some vigor and vim or whatever, you know?
Right. But all the authority figures in this film, which, I mean, that's a huge thing. You're either an authority figure or under the thumb, essentially. Except for at the end where there's a couple of, you know, graduates. One appears on camera and one that appears via a letter, but you know, so their greatest generation, the authority figures,
yeah, for sure,
and they really reflect it, and it's really funny the way that they seem to be acknowledging but giving no power to any sort of civil rights that the students are pushing for, because I mean frequently the conversations in it are surrounding the idea of punishment in this.
Right? Yeah.
These aren't like casual conversations in the hallway about this and that. These are people getting called into the office type stuff. Mm-hmm. Either that or classroom experiences. And all the punishment scenes, seems inevitable that the student will bring up something about their own sense of right and wrong and standing up for their own sense of priorities in life. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, the teachers pull this trick that's just the way they're like, well, that is a really good thing, but this isn't the moment for it. Yeah. This is the moment to show that you could just obey a command.
Yeah, that's right. That's a very formative scene.
I see we're out to establish something, aren't we?
Yes.
We're out to establish that you can be a man and you can take orders. We want to prove them that you can take the orders.
Well, Mr. Moon, see, it's all against my principles. You have to stand for something.
Yes, but I think the principles aren't involved here. I think that's a question now of proving yourself to be a man. It's a question here of how do we follow the rules and regulations? If there's a mistake made, there's an approach to it. I think you don't fight with a teacher. I think you ask permission to talk and ask them to listen to you.
I remember having like a similar thing in high school, and like, and to bracket my high school experiences, very different because I went to an all-boys Catholic school.
Oh, my.
So, like, even, like, all the stuff with, like, anything involving the girls, I was just like, well, we didn't even have that part. That was... But we did get probably, you know, similar, like, lectures. The sex talk lectures are just a whole other Why are these not in grindcore records? Like, these are like every grindcore album should be sampling high school. I feel like there's so much good stuff in here.
The men's sex ed in particular really crosses a lot of lines. I mean, I don't even consider myself like really hard fighting some like good fight in terms of wokeness, and still it was like this isn't right. Like there's like the gynecologist who instantly turns his career into a sexual violation joke.
Yeah, very bad.
It's like that's not okay.
No, it's not.
And then I mean, there's also not in the sex ed as much, but all those strange etiquette classes the women go to.
Oh, yeah, it's just a lot of body shaming.
Yeah, a lot of body shaming.
So much body shaming happens in this. Basically, it's like you cannot really put it in the context of, like, what we would see now. But except for, like, it just made me depressed about, like, how much influence teachers have in a way. It's like, oh, yeah, you just a bunch of – there's, like, not a standardized way of teaching things. And, like, it's just, like – I remember having so many weird teachers. And like just thinking now being an adult and being like, oh, yeah, there's been times in my life where I'm like, maybe I should just become a teacher. And then I'm like, I would have been like one of those teachers. I would have like totally like turned some people like a weird direction.
Yeah. I mean, there's that line, something, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, where the woman says, well, she's fat, but it's okay because she knows it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's okay for her to say that.
Also, like, a lot of these teachers have five jobs. Like, it's kind of like, I think that's probably still the case.
That's the case for me in the 90s in high school. Don't know about now.
Yeah. Like, did you have home ec? Because we didn't have home ec.
That didn't exist. No home ec.
When did they get, I feel like in a weird way, home ec is something useful, like now.
I would have loved to have taken a class about how to fix my car.
Yeah. Like, practical shit. I think they're trying to bring some of the... there was some article I was reading about. There was a class at Berkeley, like a decal class. It's like life skills. It's like it's called like adulting, and it's like, oh yeah, it's because they didn't teach you that shit in high school anymore. There's like no home ec stuff. Being at a Catholic school, like you definitely get like a weird slant on any like you know reproductive rights talks.
Right.
There. I mean, it's probably closer to 1968 in a lot of ways.
I went to kind of a hippie private school, so the sex ed and the drug ed was fairly liberal. Mm-hmm. I would say actually I wasn't even interested in doing drugs until the drug ed class I took, in which they described what acid was in such a pragmatic kind of way that I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's the effects that I am in the market for.
Yeah, thanks for the infomercial.
Right,
on,
I don't need these
acid.
Other ones. Oh, highly non-addictive. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
This seems like a good sale.
I've always been of the mind. I'd say, you know me, I'm generally like a sober person. I've always said I think I would do mushrooms over acid just because one of them was already here and the other one was created by the CIA. So
as someone that's done both and now would not do either because I don't know what I would get out of it as a grown ass man, but you know, the acid was easier not to lose control on, so I preferred it.
Oh, okay, because like mushrooms, you really don't know what you're dealing with, like end result-wise.
So many strains and things like that. Acid is being made, well, at least we're at Berkeley, is being made by, you know, some student that probably has like a very sharp-minded about exactly what they want to get out of it, and you know. I could go walk down the street and if I needed to hold a reasonable conversation with someone and then go lay down in the park and like see a bunch of crazy stuff. Mushrooms, I might just be rolling around naked on the ground and in my mind, somewhere in the back of my mind being like, I wish I could stop.
Someone's inside. Like, someone's in here. Like, it's a bathroom. Someone's in here. Oh, man. Speaking of Berkeley, Frederick Wiseman also made a whole film about UC Berkeley.
Fairly recently. I think it was,
And it's pretty long. I've seen like maybe 45 minutes of it or something like that. But yeah. He does a lot of... I'm trying to figure out his whole body work because I didn't have a chance to like cram it all before here, which seems like we don't need to anyway because like we're just
doing... I'm not
going to
cram all those movies.
That's insane. It's an insane amount of movies. But like there's sort of like a lot of stuff about like schools, a lot of stuff about disabilities, mm-hmm. like a home, I guess also school related, like a school for the deaf. There's stuff about like theater pieces and stuff or theaters. And like, you know, the institution of a theater. I've had this sort of fantasy that he would do like one of these type of movies about the Magic Castle, like just like looking at all like, well, there's people that just work in the kitchen at the Magic Castle. Yeah. They have to like come into work and they're like, oh, there's a rabbit over in that room, but I got to go, you know, prepare these steaks. You know, I think that'd be kind of interesting, but there's no way it would happen.
Also sounds like a good sitcom about a bunch of people that don't do magic, don't like magic, don't care about magic, working at the Magic Castle. They are all of your main characters and kind of depicts magic as...
It's a workplace comedy, but then, like, there's magic happening all around
yeah,
them.
And it just may be annoying to them. Like, the reveal of every trick isn't the, like, mystery of it, but mm-hmm. rather just, like, the horrible kind of slapstick punchline that it becomes.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I'm just thinking, like, if you, just had fly in the wall Verite at the Magic Castle, it'd get kind of boring. It'd be just like, you know, I'm trying to corral people in this room like, hey, what do you think? Is this your card? Damn it. I didn't work this time. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, we had a magician on this show, too, recently. So I'm like really, I think there's like a lot of stuff about the Magic Castle that's, they don't let you film anything in there. So it's like, it's only going to be like weird folklore. And I think that's right. Like kind of cool to have something that's like not overly documented that has like so much folklore attached to it. Yeah, so you went to a private school too. So this is like a totally, like, I guess our teachers are probably close to the age of these people. Like the generation, we're definitely like generations removed from this, but it's like this was like kind of like my parents' generation. Speaking of acid, there's no like psychedelic element to this movie at all, really.
No, I mean, there's that.
It's black and white. There's it's very film, grainy.
Oh, yeah. There's no... Yeah, not to the art itself. I thought you meant in the content of it.
Yeah.
I mean, because there are those...
It's a bad trip.
It's a bad trip. I don't know... You know, I can't say I felt too endeared to the counterculture students that are briefly depicted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's that one guy with the John Lennon glasses kind of... Yeah.
He's a tough swallow. There's the other guy that looks like he's like in the Four Tops or something like that. Yeah. He's like dressed in a very nice suit, but he's in that group. I liked him a lot. He's very well spoken.
Well, I think there's are you talking about the one black guy? Because that was my other question when I started watching this. I'm like, wait, 1968, like in Philly, this is just like mostly white kids school? Like
there's
what is going on?
There's a teacher that makes a comment on how everyone is Jewish at the school, which I didn't quite understand.
That also seemed like a weirdly, like maybe, like he didn't seem like he was Jewish, so it seemed like a joke.
I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, like, oh, like about a matriarchal society. That was what it was all about, matriarchal society.
He's like, we're all Jewish, so you know.
I don't think he said we're all Jewish. Is that what he said? Maybe he is. Maybe he did. Something like that. Yeah. Just a lot of like jokes that would get you fired as a teacher now, essentially. The body shaming lady. The guy who is like exactly what you think he is a guy who just looks like he's straight from like King of the Hill or like Office Space. You know, he's got that boxy haircut. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know anyone's name in this show except for like Rona is like the girl who's brought it. I was so confused. Rona's dad. That was like the first time I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Rona's dad just like
I kind of
so
loved
intense.
Him.
Yeah, he's such an intense figure. I'm just like, I was so confused. I thought it was in a teacher's lounge at first before they actually showed Rona is like sitting right there. Cause like her dad just talks like Henny Youngman, firstly, very Henny Youngman-esque. And then I was like confused about like, did he want her to go to like a fancy college and she just wanted to be a hairdresser or something? There was something like that.
That's the deal. He wants her to go to a fancy college and apparently she has a scholarship even to go to one, but she doesn't want to go to it, so...
Yeah, she wants to go to beauty school.
But he's also there to try to, like, convince the school to change her grade on something, which I don't know if that helps. There's no background for this stuff.
This dad would definitely be, like, one of these, like, you know, Felicity Huffman dads. One of these USC, like, let me bribe my kid into USC kind of dads.
Yeah. But he kind of comes across, too, as maybe, like, a used car salesman or
he's
something.
Very charismatic. Like he's like, he, I was just like, he just like jumped off the screen. I'm like, whoa,
yeah.
This feels like I'm watching. This is like one of those films where like the cat, like it's like a, this is Wyckoff, like a Ghost World or just like all the casting is just like, so it's not casted. It's just real life. And they just are such characters, such perfect characters.
Yeah, they're amazing. And the fact that he wears that suit, that's like two sizes too small for him.
I did love that, like, you saw him, then you saw his wife, and then you finally put it together when you saw Rona. I'm like, oh, yeah, she looks just like you smashed those two people together.
Right.
And they made him younger. I'm like, that's what genetics is, I guess.
Yeah, and then he even cracks a joke that makes the teacher question if it's appropriate, where he says, about his daughter, where he says... something along the lines like, if only she had the brains to match her strength.
Yeah, something like that.
And then the teacher asks, are you okay with this joke? And she's like, I'm into it. And she looks legitimately into it. Like, I don't know. They even read as like masochism. It read as like just a time and place where people are. I think that's one thing. You look at it from today's point of view, and you could see it just as... these kind of bigoted institutions speaking freely and those not in power unable to do anything about it. But on the other hand, I think there's a degree to which it's not just tolerance by the people, like the students of it, that there is that part that people always talk about, like, oh, the kids used to be raised to be stronger. To some degree, they are. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's complete. I don't think it's the whole story. I think both are true here. I think people are being pieces of shit. But I also think that the students are kind of know when these authority figures are not speaking the truth they believe in, and are like, nah, they're just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're strong enough to not get like messed up by it. It seems like they come across pretty resilient, unfazed.
Yeah. What's a clip you would pick to talk about? Like what's like if you're like just gonna show a clip on YouTube to someone who's never seen this movie? It's like just like one section. What would you focus on?
I'd probably pick the clip that is just the one that's always stuck in my head because it's what was on my VHS.
That's where the VHS started.
which is the one that we kind of referenced a little bit. It's the film class elective class with there's two liberal teachers, like clearly liberal teachers. There's the one with
Simon Garfunkel girl.
That appears to be a poetry class. Okay, but then there's also a film class where they don't talk about film, but someone acknowledges this is a film class, but they're just talking about civil rights.
Right. And, yeah.
And
because it was the same year Martin Luther King was killed. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 68.
And because I think it's interesting that the teacher in there, who is clearly more liberal than anyone else and younger, she still defends the school a lot and the other teachers. And she is willing to criticize a lot of these students that are trying to say like that they want things to be more liberal. And she's like, that's great and all, and you have a good point. But I think at one point she says, anyone that heard you talking about now would think you're just being spoiled or smartass because they are just kind of getting like, they're just kind of resorting to like shallow insults too. Mm-hmm. But it's just such an interesting mix. And as someone that definitely would have hung out with kids like that for my version in the 90s, it was always enlightening to see like, is that what it looked like from the outside? Good to know.
I didn't really empathize with the authority figures in this at all, but I didn't like side with the kids as much as I thought I would for the most part. I'm like, oh yeah, like I was definitely like a troublemaker in high school. I definitely, like, now, you know, I'm not a parent or anything, but I can just see, like, I'm like, oh man, what a nightmare to deal with all these kids. Mm-hmm. I can see the craziness of that. The gender politics of it, again, going back to that, is like really comes up in the scene where they're just telling this girl that she can't wear this skirt that is like just a little bit above the knee. It's like, and they get into a whole like codified thing about like, nightgown is this, like an evening gown is this, like a cocktail dress is this, like, and like, and then the one woman being the older teacher being like, I have to wear a full length gown if I'm going to go to this thing and I can't even get in the car. Like, it's just like, you have, it's like, I had to pay my student loans, so you can't get free student loans.
Right.
It's essentially
exactly.
The version of that.
It is. And the only really positive point that they can note on the whole thing, which I don't know, it's a strange one, is this is the one opportunity to see all your classmates dress differently. That's essentially what they say. Like, you've never seen them dress like this, and now you'll get to. It's like, were we interested in this?
People dress like in a very weirdly, I mean, I guess it's just of the time, the fashions are just bizarre to me now. But yeah, no, like, it's like if you're going to do a prom, it is like this weird thing of like, pretend you're an adult, but you're not, but we're going to control it still.
Yeah, yeah. The authority figures definitely treat cultural standards as almost forces of nature, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the big difference. That's the moment in time that we're looking at here is students saying, we as humans decide what these rules are. This isn't gravity. This, you know, aren't laws of motion and physics and stuff. This, you know, you say that's what you have to wear to this event, but there's actually no one in charge of this.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I think like the cultural things that were going on around the same time that are kind of like about whatever, like the new America, it's like maybe like The Graduate or something. Yeah. But then like, this is like the people that are holding on, they're like clawing onto like the rules for like dear life, basically.
Yeah.
And being like, we know the gates are going to get unleashed. This is our last moment to try and control these people.
But I related to it a lot. I kind of wish I'd seen it when I was in high school, but I relate to it a lot because this is depicting a lot of students that are essentially hearing about what's going on in the world, but not living it.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so kind of it's them dreaming of this fantasy of what probably life will be like after high school and be a part of that. And I relate to that a lot as someone that, even though I had the privilege of going to a very liberal private school, you know, I would, you know, read Spin magazine and like always dig for the one little small article about
you
like
precocious. I don't remember that.
Reading about like what's going on with like the Riot Girl scene and
who's
stuff like
Byron
this.
Coley.
and so I was just like, I would dream like in my head there's this fantasy about what the counterculture was in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
But I was just a kid at a school and I did hang out with who the other kind of like you know, outcasts were, but none of them were punk rock. I was the only kid like into that sort of thing. All the other kids that I hung out with that didn't quite fit in.
Yeah.
It was all like the Asian gangster kids.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time.
I didn't even hang out with Asian gangster kids. I'm like, what are the Asian in LA, what were the Asian gangster kids into? Even
well, we were in the Valley, right?
Oh, the Valley,
and
right.
And so
okay.
A lot of them knew the ones in LA and they actually were up to some stuff that would be dangerous and shady, but usually I stayed away from that. Usually we were just a bunch of dorks hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is they may have been dressing like the like 90s tag banger wear and love listening to like, you know, the new Eazy-E and Snoop Dogg stuff, but also Get Us Alone in a Car Together and they'd want me to play them like every, you know, new thing on Kill Rock Stars that I bought and all this stuff. And they love that too.
Oh.
And we listen to both. And that's how my band Rose for Bodan got started. That was me and Alan Sung and James Yum, is that they're like, we all love the same type of music, both hip hop and punk. Let's start a band.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny that at that time in 95, that was too weird of a notion. Nowadays, nowadays, like punk and hip hop are going hand in hand. But
yeah,
it's probably the only place we can get shows at that time were at a drag night in Hollywood.
Okay. So you're in high school playing with Rosebud Bodan at a drag night?
Yeah, that's where we would play. Nice. Vaginal Davis, who's a big SST kind of a figurehead, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Personality hosted it. But in any case, I related to these kids with this idea that what I thought was most fascinating about the world, was really just in my head. Like I was getting it through the media
mm-hmm.
and then living out. And I assume they were too. I don't. How else are they hearing about? Maybe brothers and sisters in college, but...
Yeah. So, like, they're getting, like, maybe word of, like, oh, there's this Summer of Love thing happening, but then there's also, like, hey, my brother went to Vietnam, you know? It's, like, everything is happening, like, outside of this kind of protected space in a weird way.
Right.
It does feel, like, weirdly, like... I guess it's historical... It is, like, such a weird historical slice. You've got a little bit of, like, people still are into, like, space... stuff like moon stuff and like there's like a some kind of like simulated like moon shot stuff
right
that
they
doing.
Imply that those kids were actually locked into a fake like spaceship for over 100 hours. I don't understand if that's
like
true.
One of them grew a beard in that time
right
or something, like I guess a 5 o'clock shadow beard also like did these kids seem like they some of them seem like they were 30 and some of them were look like they were 12. Was like very weirdly like I'm like is that is kind of what high school looks like sometimes just maybe it's the haircuts of the time but some of these guys were like is that teacher looks like she would be someone in a junior in high school and then that man that boy is like 25. I don't know.
Well, maybe they're the ones that grew up to getting all the jobs casting these movies in the 80s and 90s that had 30-year-olds playing high school.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because they're like, that guy looks more like me in high school than...
Do you like Freaks and Geeks? Did you ever watch that show?
I've actually never seen it.
You think you'd like it? If this is like one of your favorite documentaries, then I think you would like Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah. I picked this as my favorite because I do love the subject matter and it was really compelling, but... You know, there's so many documentaries I watch now where I couldn't say anything positive about the craft of making it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of forget about the delivery system entirely after I've watched it and learned the information. And that's what if I tell someone about it, I'm not talking about the movie anymore.
You're talking about the content. Or the subject, yeah.
And so I thought that was an important thing to acknowledge, on a podcast like this. The other one that came to mind, unfortunately, I think is impossible to see intentionally, which is a movie from 2 years ago called Shakedown, which I love. And I just want to give a shout out because if you can go see it, you should go. I think it only plays like at festivals or something every once in a while. But it's about like an underground, like DIY lesbian strip club scene. Like they're like pop-ups and they're real like off the radar. So I also kind of feel unqualified to talk about the content a lot.
Right.
But in terms of craft, that is the most incredibly well-crafted documentary I've ever seen.
Shakedown. Okay. I've not heard about that one.
I forget the director's last name. Leela, I believe, is her first name. And if I'm wrong, I deeply apologize.
Someone out there, get at us on Twitter. Get at Death Bomb Arc on Twitter. Like
I can figure it out. I just didn't come prepared.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
She's one of the founders of Hood by Air.
Oh, I don't know that.
It's a like streetwear company.
Okay.
So amazing. Though, like just to experience that film, like the what she does, because her footage is super raw.
Did you see it in a theater?
Yeah.
Okay.
So one of the queer film festivals in LA. I don't remember which one.
Yeah.
Amazing. But this is also amazing, too.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can talk about what happened to it and have any sorts of real knowledge to share.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's before our times, but it is sort of like I said, this is sort of like, although the boomers people are mad about, it's like you get to see them be like punk kids. So the cycle continues. Another thing I thought was interesting, having watched this one and then watched a little bit of High School 2, is there is both of those movies also have scenes where people are talking about how the wealth and poverty gap is the worst it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, that keeps being the case for some reason. I don't know. Maybe is it the education system? Is that part of it? Yeah, it's pretty grim stuff, but also just like a weird slice of America. Right.
Well, that's an interesting thing because this is filmed. This is from what, 69?
68, I think. Yeah.
So it's one of the last years before our government started severely cutting funds to education as a response to trying to make sure civil rights movements don't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because they saw like, oh no, we educated everyone so we can go to space, but now they're so smart they know we shouldn't go to war. And they're like, so like, is there a way to educate people that want to just go to space and be good at but not go to war? And they're like, nah, just make them dumb and we won't go to space and we will go to war. But anyway, so it's nice to see that slice there.
Still pro space and like ambivalent about war. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, little do those boomers know. And it's funny, boomers are blamed for so much now, but actually, what they're doing by being there talking about how they want civil rights so much is digging the grave of the education system unintentionally, you know? Well, I guess, oh, wait, they are blamed. Okay, sorry. I don't have a point. Sure, it's their fault, but it's their fault because they were too liberal, actually.
Right, it's just like the message of Watchmen, I think. It's like, be careful what you wish for, essentially.
Oh, my God. Yeah. The lack of ability to read my sarcasm over a podcast probably just made me come off across as some, like, alt-right.
This is, Subtalk has taken a turn on this episode. Also, just a fascinating, I'm a fan of weird accents, and there's so many weird accents in this.
Right.
Like, to me, they're weird. I don't know. I don't really, we're on the West Coast, so maybe this is still, people talk like, kind of like the Kennedys or something.
Some.
There's some weird thing going on. I can't, like, I just gotta play this clip of the typing instructor. Also, remember, did you have to take typing? Like,
computer.
Your word count used to matter. Like, I was praying for the day that you could talk and a machine would transcribe it, and now I don't want that anywhere near me. But, here's a clip of the typing instructor from high school.
All right, as I read the paragraph from the book, let's follow on what we've typed. The two men went down with me down the long road, comma, space. And in no time at all, we had reached the lake and found the path up to the spring, period, double space, capital W. We had made the hike in less than 2 hours, semicolon, space. The day was fine for it, comma, space. Mild and cool, comma, space. And the three of us felt fine, period.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you have the typing, like the computer games, where it was like a kind of like a Hangman meets a Space Invaders? Like you had to like type the word fast enough to like prevent something from like
I had something. My class had something, but I don't remember it being entertaining enough that I could recall story was. There's some though, because I don't know if you remember on the Dreamcast there was a game called Typing of the Dead.
No.
Which is like full like Dreamcast like cool graphics game, but you play it with a keyboard
like a regular computer.
It's a keyboard that's plugged into where the joystick normally would, and and all these, like, it's like first person view, you know, view, and like zombies are coming at you. And if you can type the words that come up on the screen fast enough, they die, you know, or they get, you shoot them, you know? And if you don't, you die. And it's like, that's like one of those things in school where by the end you're, typing nonsense and all this stuff.
Yeah. Just to like get, and then imagine like someone comes at you with this weird ass accent, like a zombie who's like, it's just like a Kennedy zombie coming at you. Like, type in the word elementary. I think we've said as much as we can say about high school, other than, one random thing. He was going to get sued by the city for his, bad portrayal of the school or something.
So they
made sure that they would not air this in, this did not have a screening in Philadelphia until like the 2000s or something, like it's several generations later till they actually showed the movie anywhere in Philadelphia.
It's interesting to think that all it took was filming it and watching what happens there once. And even at that time, it wasn't like, oh, culturally, this is fine now. They're like, yeah, this is bad.
Yeah, they just think it makes them look like they're a failing institution, which I guess is kind of the point.
I mean, culturally, but it doesn't seem to be their goal or stance. It seems thriving in terms of its own weird goals that I just would never have if somehow someone put me in charge of a school.
What would the Brian Miller high school experience be like? Let's say you're like the Professor X of your own, which in a way is kind of like what running a label is like, right? Like you're putting together your X-Men constantly. Like sometimes Wolverine goes off and does a solo project, but.
Well, I mean, if my template is this and they say change it, I mean, I'm probably not going to teach people that the more you have sex, the worse you get at it.
Yeah, that's right. That's the,
I think that's my school's number one goal. Like, don't tell people the more you have sex, the worse you get at
it. Yeah, the worst partner you become. Yeah,
yeah.
All right. Sometimes we like to ask. I don't want to do the casting game on this one. There's just like,
it's too hard.
Too hard to do. I mean, other than there's just like,
I
want to cast them in other movies.
Yeah, right.
Is basically what I want. I'm going to do the reverse. We do a game, not really a game. We just kind of talk about, you pitch a documentary that you think should be made. It's a way to get to know something that you're interested in or a passion you know about. I mean, we know you like music. We know you like, I know you like horror Blu-rays.
Right. More than enough horror documentaries out there for me already.
Plenty.
But I do have something to kind of relate to that, which is I am obsessed with home haunting, which if people don't know is a particular like aspect of haunted mazes. Most people are familiar with those probably at their local amusement park and in October, a place like Universal Studios, they build all these mazes and you pay a bunch of money and go. But these types of things exist on all levels, including people that just make them in their driveways and garages. And I'm obsessed with those ones, this kind of like folk art version of the haunted maze, which ends up in turn kind of being the folk art version of installation art and performance art and so much stuff that, usually is considered to be the kind of loftiest aspects of contemporary art. And there's a lot of documentaries about haunting in general, but all of them seem to only include either home haunts as just one part of it, or there is one I'm familiar with that is like, it's like a slice of life like thing where it shows like, here's three home haunts in one same town, right? And it's more just...
Are they competitive with each other in that?
If they see themselves that way. They aren't naturally so. I forget the name of that one. I'll look it up. But and it kind of doesn't treat it as an art form. It treats it more as like one of those like wacky Americans type things, you know?
We love those.
I love them. But I think there's something significant going on in art by virtue of the existence of these and by the virtue of them existing at all these different levels in terms of our kind of like economics, that we have giant corporations making them, and then we have people that are trying to make a go of like a mom and pop business of them, and then these ones that I love the most, the home haunt ones. And I think, you know, I think people are reaching all walks of life doing this by opening up your homes. And now what I'm starting to see as someone that attends them a lot is that they're also separating themselves from just being something seasonal and festive, which I also think invites it. It's like, it'd be weird. Like, it'd be weird if, you know, if like a certain type of music, like new age music, only was ever made and performed 1 month of the year. It was seasonal, right? People might not respect it as much. It'd be like Christmas songs. Be like, oh, what's your genre? Christmas songs. Like, they'd be like, but now people are making haunts and home haunts
year-round,
all types of year. All times of year. They're just like, they come up with a thing, and they still are tying them to seasons. Like, I went to a bunch of Christmas home haunts this year.
Okay.
Like a Gremlins one and a Krampus one. And then one of the people they're talking about, like, well, Valentine's Day is an excuse, so maybe I'll do a twist on the Tunnel of Love, you know? And I'm hoping eventually they just depart ways from holidays at all, and people just realize, oh, people love coming to my house and seeing this thing, and you do this immersion, you go through this thing. And I think it's fascinating what's going on there, and it's fascinating that a lot of people that, it's, you know, and even though we're in LA, a lot of people that make them, they're not even in the entertainment industry.
Well, that was my first thought, was like, I was like trying to figure out why they were such a thing here. And then someone pointed out, like, oh, it's probably people that are like prop builders that just live in whatever.
I had that same intuition when I first started getting into this about 10 years or so ago. But talking to people, that's more rare. I think maybe some of the earlier ones are the significant ones that is true of, but then other people see it and witness it, and they get inspired by it, and they're doing it.
So you're thinking about it, like, kind of the angle is, it's how it fits as a folk art into a dialogue with, like, other forms of art.
Right.
And just, like, or, like, kind of, like, it feels very American, though. Just, I mean, right, like, Americana, but it's, like, is this as big of a thing in Canada or other places?
No,
or?
But that's what I think. I think it's, I think it's an emerging American art form.
Okay, gotcha.
The way that, like, the blues and jazz and rock and hip hop all were, you know, they're seen as like art forms that are distinctly birthed in America.
Yeah.
I think a very long history of dark rides and wanting to scare people for entertainment and theatrical stuff, plus combined with a lot of contemporary art things, like I already mentioned, and combined with it being an art, like, I think, like, a real art form would have to exist on all these levels, too, that I'm talking about, right? Like financially, you know?
Right.
Something that just is in people's homes, or just, you can only do it if you have $1 million, you know? Like, I don't know if I consider, like, that's a whole art form, right? Like, that's emerging, but, you know, there's always the folk art version of rock and roll. There's always the folk art version of hip-hop, right? You have, you know, it won't be a surprise if you heard that some 15-year-old in their garage we're making music like that. But it's reaching the point now where it's not a surprise, to me at least, that a 15-year-old is making a haunt in their garage in May.
Yeah. I was also remembering this thing at this showcase that you did a couple months ago, where this older Chinese woman showed up because your flyer had like a Nosferatu on it. And she thought that you were throwing like a November haunted house.
Right, in November. So, I mean, I think that says a lot about perception of what haunts are, that it didn't faze her that it was November. Maybe she hadn't forgotten. I mean, you know, maybe she didn't realize that how Halloween works, that it's not it's not like a horseshoe thing where it's like, well, it's still close, but you have the other end. But,
But then she just ended up watching Ed Balloon, like, and then, like, being like, oh, I'm going to get kicked in the face. I better move back.
Yeah, it's funny. She was dancing more than anyone else, too.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see a documentary about those.
Yeah. Shout out also to a friend, a mutual friend of ours, Vice Cooler, who has a book of photographs and I think reviews of home haunts in L.A. I think it's called Haunts of L.A., and I think he has an Instagram for it. And he used to run a blog as well.
I think his Instagram is the blog at the point, and then he has the book.
Yeah, yeah.
I know the book has a ton of home hunts in it. Like, Vice is really good about paying attention to home hunts. He also pays attention to other types of haunts on other levels as well.
And all kinds of folk art, I guess, as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he does a lot of lawn displays even too. Like, so that's another thing as well. A lot of times I tell people I'm into these and they go, oh, like my neighbor. And all they really mean is the neighbor has
puts up some lights or
has like a bunch of like statuettes and animatronics on the lawn. And it's like, no, I don't mean that either. Like, it needs
it's more DIY.
There needs to be a narrative that you experience through physicality. Like,
okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very interesting thing.
Maybe that's the future of documentary, is a narrative you experience through physicality. Like, it's going to have to be like Errol Morris does like some kind of, ride, essentially. Right. Like, but it's kind of ride aesthetics.
So that's what the Ronald Reagan Library is kind of like. Have you been there?
Fuck no. What is that check like? It's like a haunted castle. Well,
because it's like a museum, but it's not like a museum where you can free roam. It's pathed. Uh-huh. You're on a path, and it's a bunch of volunteer boomers that hang out like every 100 yards or so. That if they see you getting off the path, kind of scold you about it. Like,
just like being in the 80s. Yeah. Just like being in high school.
Right, just like being in high school. And so you go along this path.
You have a hall pass.
Yeah, it's crazy. But it's like that. It's like a podcast about the life of him, but it's a museum path experience. You go through it. First, there's a hologram of Reagan comes out. And then, like, you know, you see, like, a bunch of stuff from, like, his college days. Yeah. And then...
Wait, did I just invent what a museum is? We're just like, it's a narrative, nonfiction,
right,
physical.
Right, but most museums, they let you
they let you go.
This one is like, a path.
Yeah, yeah.
But you get to go onto Air Force One.
I guess, like, Disney has, like, the president, animatronic presidents and shit, too.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but Air Force, they have an Air Force One there.
Yeah, those are analog podcasts.
Yeah, very much.
Right. I mean, but a podcast is just a radio show, right?
Yeah, essentially. No, actually, I'm going to put this... You're going to release this as a cassette, is what we just decided. This now has a catalog number. I was going to talk about a documentary that I wanted to see made, but then I found out there someone did make a documentary about it, but I have... You might be interested in this. It's kind of weirdly feels like it overlaps with Hauntings. There is this book, The Secret... Which is not the one about the wishing for stuff.
Oh,
it was a picture book in 1982 that this sci-fi author made, and it has like paintings in it and poetry, and they together equaled treasure maps. There's like 12 sites around America where he buried these little plexiglass keys, and you're supposed to decode where they are buried in public parks in America based on the clues from the poetry and the picture.
Oh, okay.
And they found three of them. They found one in the 80s, one in like 2004, and they just found another one in Boston like last year because it was like in a park that was being dug up. And someone's like, oh shit, this is probably where it is. And they had to just sift through the rubble to find it. And there's there's some kind of reality discovery show that covers this. And there's also, as I was Googling this, being like, this is going to be my topic. There's a guy, a true crime writer, who's obsessed with this stuff too and made a short, a documentary.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand.
It.
I thought Reddit solves crimes and stuff like this so fast now that they would just get them all in like a
week.
So
here's the thing that I think is fascinating about it. What you were supposed to do, the author of this thing died in like 2006 or something. So basically you were supposed to like dig up the key and call them and they would give you a jewel in exchange for the key that had the value of $1,000, which now doesn't mean shit.
Right.
Basically. So it's like people are just pursuing this to try and figure out the mystery, but there's no way to really redeem the prize anymore.
Right.
It's like if he had actually put the jewels in the boxes, I think there'd be more motivation to actually go and do this. Like when I was reading about him, it was really fascinating. I'm blanking on his name right now. I'll put a link in the notes. But he also worked on like early like video game kind of like narrative books. Mm. Like essentially like he co-authored and I think they're called iBooks. And right. So, like, I think Apple firstly took Apple from John Lennon or yeah. whatever, the Beatles, yeah. Apple, the record company, and then iBooks, they had to take it from this dude. It was, like, kind of like an interactive video game of, like, Fahrenheit 451.
Right.
So he co-authored with Ray Bradbury. So, basically, it was, like, a guy who was, like, thinking about different marketing for, like, genre books back right. then. So, this was, like, almost like a marketing idea. It was based on another book, but I discovered this because I had to deal with this I had to find this podcast, and it was like, I'm like, what are they talking about? This isn't The Secret. Like when I think of The Secret, like you're manifesting shit. And then I was just like, went down a rabbit hole of the whole thing. But there is a film about it. Have not seen it yet. So it seemed like it came out maybe 2-3 years ago, but they found another, they found one in the last year. So I think that film either needs to be updated, or we could just do a whole different thing about this phenomenon. But yeah, look, Google The Secret treasure hunt, and you will find out. You could go down such a rabbit hole like I did. Like these, it's such a weird thing. And then the guy who wrote it seems like such a bonkers person. So that is, even though it's kind of a cheat in the sense that there is a film about it, I'm just going to propose there be more films about this. So yeah, Brian, what do you want to plug from, and how can people find you on social media?
Just search for Death Bomb Arc. That's death as in dying, bomb as in explodes, arc as in electrical, ARC, Death Bomb Arc, anywhere you go. If I'm not there, it's because I don't want to be.
And is True Neutral like a private thing, or is this?
And it's like a, at this point,
it's like a project that you were doing. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't Death Bomb Arc is fine. I don't know. I'm always up to something new. By the time you hear this, whether it's right when it came out or months from now,
something weird will be happening. I mean, we were just talking. I know about some releases you're going to do. We can't talk about yet.
Yeah,
and I know about a show you're doing that we can't talk about yet either, but I'll make sure to like also retweet it.
No, but I still say this every time I go anywhere and I'm speaking to strangers like this. One of my bucket list goals in life is to be able to shoot a bazooka before I die. So if you're the person to help with that, get in touch. All right, thank you.
If you run a haunt with a bazooka, get at Death Bomb Arc. Thanks for listening to SupDoc, guys. Thanks. Thanks, bye, Brian. Bye.
Thanks bye. For listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com. Recapping reality since 2015. Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show is engineered by Will Scoville. For as little as $1 a month, you can donate to the show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast. If you want to help us in other ways, please share the show. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Find Paco and George's comedy gigs on the About Us page on the site. SupDoc is by doc fans for doc fans. So if you want to advertise with SupDoc, got a film or opinions, hit us up. We'd love to hear from you and what you're docking out on. Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.